Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and no Christine this week. Christine is battling her post-accident issues, so no Christine, but we have with us, returning once again, I think this is the fourth or fifth time, it's the Twisted One, Vonna Pfeiffer. Hi, Vonna.
Hi, Gary.
Number 70, this is Fiber Talk podcast with a guest, number 70.
Awesome.
I can't believe we've done 70 of these, but we have.
That is awesome. I didn't realize, and I've listened to every one, and I didn't realize it was 70. My goodness.
Yeah, it's 70 of those, and I think we're at 52 of the midweek ones.
Wow.
So, yeah, how's that, huh?
That's a, like, what would you call that? That's a kingdom.
Yeah.
A kingdom of great stuff.
It's amazing, but hey, they're fun every time, so worth it. Okay. Yep. All right. I got to know what happened to you. What is the deal with quilting? You have just like dove in head first here. Man, you've just gone crazy. And apparently you have some talent because those quilts look beautiful.
I don't know, Gary. You know me. I'm all or nothing.
Yeah, that's clear.
That's the way it is.
Well established.
And how this all got started was, I think it was like on January 2nd or 3rd, you know, it was that after the holidays and you're kind of having a little post, you know, holiday depression, and someone had given me a jelly roll, and I looked up on YouTube.
Stop right there. Okay. I don't know what a jelly roll is.
Okay, so it's what it is it's fabric that is pre-cut in 2.5 by like 40 inches. So it's a yard of material is, you know, cut is 42, 44 inches wide. So it's a 2.5 inch strip off of a yard of material. And there's like, they're usually done in lines of material, you know, like the fabric designers will have lines, and each of those lines will have maybe, you know, 20, 25, 30, 40, you know, pieces in that line. And so they cut off a 2.5 inch strip off each piece of that line, and then they roll it up so it looks like a jelly roll, like a jelly roll cake, you know?
So it's a roll of strips of cloth of varying colors or patterns that all kind of go together.
Yes, exactly. And isn't that great? And I mean, it's all cut. And so I had this jelly roll that somebody just gave me, and I've had it for like maybe 2 or 3 years, and it was by Blackbird Designs. The cross stitch people also quilt, you know, they have that's how they started out, I think, kind of through their quilting patterns, and they have Moda fabric lines, and it was a jelly roll from the Madeira. Or Madeira. I don't know how to say it. It's the drink. What's the drink? Madeira?
Diet Pepsi.
Know. Yeah.
I have no idea.
Anyways,
I'm the last guy to know. Sorry.
And it was from their line. And I know that a lot of people covet that because it's no longer in existence.
Oh.
And so I had it and I thought, oh, I ought to do something with this. And I looked up on YouTube, jelly roll quilting, and lo and behold, there is a thing called jelly roll quilt race, a jelly roll race quilt. And I watched the video from Missouri Star Quilts, and I made it in 2 hours. I had a quilt.
No,
no kidding. I'm not lying.
No,
it's true. It's that fast.
Wow.
And I had the quilt top, now not quilted and sandwiched and all that.
Yeah.
And I was so impressed with myself. And I've always wanted to kind of quilt, but, you know, you have kids, and that wasn't my, you know, to quilt, you have to have a lot of stuff, really. And I just didn't have time to think about that. Cross stitch was my thing. And now that I've got a little bit of extra time, I thought, I might look into that. I was just kind of dipping my toe into it. I wasn't going to go whole hog. And then I took my, this is where I quit dipping and just dove right in. I was taking my sewing machines in to get their annual, you know, blowout and lube and spa days. And when I was in my sewing machine center, which also is a quilt shop, they had classes for 2018. They had beginning quilting class. And I thought, oh, I did so good on that. Maybe I should just really, and I didn't know what I was doing. I just followed the tutorial, the YouTube tutorial. I maybe ought to try to take that. You know, I've got sewing. I know how to sew. I've taught myself that pretty good. Maybe I need to know the whole thing about quilting. So I took this beginning quilt class, and it has just blossomed after that. I signed up for the beginning quilt class, and then the lady goes, who knows me at the sewing machine center, said, you know, well, you could do this block. We're having a block of the month club. You could do this. And I was like, okay, sign me up. And then she said, oh, well, here we're having a free motion quilting class. Oh, you all need to do that. And so I took all these classes, and I'm just really enjoying it. And I feel like I have a talent for it. So that's my story. I think I can call myself a quilter.
Well, yeah, all the quilts that you've shown, I mean, talk about having some talent. I mean, it's clear that, you know, everything meets up like it should, and nice patterns. And I mean, the craftsmanship is obvious. So it was like you found another home.
I know. I really have enjoyed. Honestly, I have really enjoyed it a lot. And it's something, since my whole life is cross stitch, I mean, every part of my life, my work, my hobby, everything, it's kind of refreshing to have something different, you know? And I think that's why I've just really taken to it so, you know, so fast and have dove right in. It won't be my first love. Cross stitch is always, I prefer it, but I do like quilting a lot. So,
well, there's a lot to be said for having a diversion. Yeah. A something different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it keeps your interest level up on both ends. Yeah.
It does. It does. And you think there's a lot of math in quilting, you know, really, honestly,
there is.
Oh gosh. Yes. A lot.
Oh.
And, so you have to like think, and it's like, you know, it's like that hard math, like 1/8 and 1/16, all that stuff. And I have to like really think when I'm cutting out the patterns and stuff like that. So, it just uses that brain, you know, my scientist part right, of my yep. brain that I no longer use.
I was going to say, had to haul that out of the closet, didn't you?
Yeah. So it was like, ooh, I feel like I'm, you know, I'm using that part of my brain that I don't really use any much anymore. And so it's just really been, it's been very fun. I have just really enjoyed it a lot. So,
now,
I'm excited about it.
Help me with this a little bit. So you get the top. I get how the top is made. You take all these pieces, you sew them together, what 1/8 mm-hmm. inch seams, and press them open and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you got to put some kind of batting and then a back on it, and mm-hmm. and then some kind of binding around the edges.
Mm-hmm. So you make your quilt sandwich, and then you quilt it, and then you put your binding on it.
Oh, you quilt. So you make all those swirly single stitch lines or whatever mm-hmm. the pattern is, and then you put the edge on.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Okay.
Are you doing the quilting part, or are you having that done?
Well, my first quilting class, so my beginning quilting class, I have the sandwich made, and I have done a few straight line quilting. So like, I use a walking foot on my new machine that I bought for quilting, mm-hmm. my Juki. And, so it's just stitching in the ditch. But this is kind of cool. I was watching a video, you know, so we talk about floss tube. There is a whole like quilt tube. I don't think they call it that. that's my coining, but there's like a whole bunch of quilters that have videos. And so I watched them, and there's a, I think her name is Debbie Brown. She used this like really cool, she does a lot of straight line quilting, which is what you do on like a home sewing machine with a walking foot. And she used a circular saw laser pointer thing that you would stick on your your saw to have a line to follow to cut, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I bought one off of Amazon and I put it on my sewing machine. She taught me to do this. This was not my idea. To put it on your sewing machine to make the straight line on your quilt.
Oh.
And so you fall, then you sew that line. And so I've done that. So I'm in the process of quilting my first quilt. And it's going pretty good. I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be a little rough because I'm not a pro at it yet. But I think I'm doing okay. So we'll see.
Because, see, my stepmother used to, she doesn't anymore, but she used to do quilts like crazy. Like all of her walls were covered with quilts and it was just kind of ridiculous. But she had one of those long arm deals down in the basement. And that was just amazing to me because you just put the whole quilt on and it just kind of goes like a robot.
Yeah, like on a frame. Yeah, and then it rolls it up. Now, see, I don't have one of those. Some of those can be like as expensive as a house, you know, some of them.
Yeah, I think hers was plenty that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and some of them are like what you said, a robot. Like you program what, you know, how big your quilt is and then start going. And I have a friend who actually quilted my first jelly roll quilt for me as a gift to me. And she has a business and she has two long arm machines. One, I believe, as I understand it, just goes like a robot, like what you say.
Yeah.
And she has that thing going. She has so much business quilting that thing goes 24 hours a day with quilts, just quilting quilts. And then she does one on her long arm that she controls herself. So.
And folks, I know this is a stitching podcast, but deal with it. I gotta learn. So then now I gotta know. So you bought a new sewing machine. So what was, because you already have two? So what?
I have two others. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the purpose of this one? Is this have more versatility for quilting?
No, it's just a straight. It's a Juki. Oh gosh, I don't know what the number is, but it's the same one that Lisa Bongian has from Primitive Gatherings, and she's a big quilter, and it's just a straight stitch. So all it does is forward and reverse. That's the only stitch that it does.
Oh.
And it's an So it's an industrial machine, so it's all made out of, like, metal. It's not plastic at all.
Oh, so
that's
heavy. That's the deal then. So it can take a beating on quilts then.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, and it has 1,500 stitches a minute. Capable of doing 1,500 stitches a minute. So think about how fast.
Holy smokes.
It scared me the first time. Yeah. The first time I used it, I didn't realize it has a speed governor on it. So you can go, it has a turtle, literally it has a picture of a turtle and a picture of a rabbit. Well, I didn't realize it was on rabbit. I just gotten it out of the box and I set it all up and I threaded it. And I was like, oh yeah, we're going to start going. And I hit the, you know, the book pedal and it literally scared the crap out of me. It was going so fast. So it's like a big sturdy machine. And but the reason that I got it was basically because of the heaviness of it, but the harp space. So the harp space is from the needle to where the motor is, the space in between there. And my Janome's only have like a 5-inch harp space, and this has a 10-inch harp space. So double.
Oh my.
So you can fit more between the needle and the motor. So that's why I did it.
Okay. Cause I didn't understand that because I knew that the two you had were, you know, pretty impressive machines. And so I thought, well, what could be more impressive than that for quilting? But, it's the durability then.
Yeah. and the fact of how fast it goes, you know, so I could do free motion quilting, where it's that stippling round, you know, like what you were saying earlier, round and round, circle, scroll. You could do that on this machine too. Right now I'm just doing straight line quilting, but if I get really brave, I did take a class on free motion. So if I get really brave, I'll try it. You have to, from what I have learned by watching, because they also have that on YouTube, how to free motion, it's more of a hand-eye coordination type thing. And I'm very dexterous. You know, that's what it takes to do the free motion. But I'm very dexterous, but I'm not very like hand-eye. Sometimes I struggle with that. So we'll see. That's why I got that machine. So it's another one. And it's a very nice machine, but I've worked so much on my Janome's that I'm more comfortable with sewing on my Janome's. So
I can understand that. Yeah. Yeah. Like coming home. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I got a kick out of the shot you put up somewhere where you had it in the back seat of the car. And everybody was freaking out because he didn't have it visibly strapped down.
Yeah, I had it hooked on the baby hook because that car is a newer car. And so it has these little hooks. And so I just hooked it on that so it wouldn't tumble. But yeah, next time I take a picture, I'm going to have the seatbelt on because everybody was like, it's going to hit you in the back of the head if you stop that. So anyways.
Yeah, everybody was looking out for you and your machine.
I thought that was funny too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, now I understand. So, okay, and then when I just got to know these things. When you say, what was it, the square of the month or something? What does that mean?
Oh, the block of the month.
Block of the month.
So yeah, so we're at the end of, I think it's November. So it's basically gone. I think it was 6 or 8 months that we're working on it. We do two blocks. They call it a block of a month, but really we've been doing two blocks every month. And by the end of November, every month, you go one time a month. So tomorrow is my day that I go for my block of the month. And I'll go and they'll give us the material and the pattern, and we cut it out and we put it together. And there's a teacher there who really does not instruct us on how to put it together. Basically, we just read the pattern and she's there to help us if we need help. Yeah. And at the end of the day, so I'll be there like 8 hours tomorrow. At the end of the day, you'll have your blocks done.
So it's not just a 2-hour drop-in thing. Wow.
No. It's all day. And you can leave at any time, but I just go ahead and stay and get it all together since I don't know. You know, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing, but I think I do because the people, I'm the only... Okay, so I'll be 48 in July. I'm 47 right now. And everybody there is probably in their 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that. I love those ladies. They have just, you know, I have the best time with them when I go to that. And we just talk and chat and sew on our sewing machines. And so anyways, once a month we get two blocks done. And then in November we'll have an entire quilt.
Oh, I see. So it's a stitch along for quilters then.
Right. Yeah. It's going to be a queen size quilt. So it's it's going to be a huge quilt. So when you get done, you'll have a whole quilt top done, but you buy it. See, so you buy each month, you pay for the block. So I think that the blocks have been like $30 a month. So think about that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's 30 times 8. What is that? $240.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's small increments, but I'm also learning so much, I you see other people, how they do things, how they approach things. And that helps me as a new quilter. I will say this is a compliment to me. They did not realize that I had never quilted before, that I had never pieced before until the second class, I guess. And I said something about, I don't know, somebody was like saying, well, you know, it's just like how you do, we were doing flying geese, the pattern flying geese. And I go, well, I don't know I don't even know how to do this. And they go, what do you mean? You've had to have made flying geese before. And I go, I've never quilted before. I've never pieced before. And they were like, what? You know, they didn't realize it. And they go, well, you've just been doing it. And I go, well, I can read patterns, but I go, I don't really know what I'm doing. So ever since then, I think I've garnered a little bit of respect from the ladies because they didn't realize
masters.
I'd never. Yeah, yeah. They didn't realize I'd never quilted before, but it's really fun. I mean, I really, if anybody has any, you know, desires to do that, you ought to look into it because I have had a really great time you know, just getting together and learning something new. So try it if you want it. If you have any desire and if you have a quilting shop near you, you should try it.
Well, I can tell from your posts. I mean, there's an element of enthusiasm there for you. You can just tell that you're excited about doing it, and the product is yeah, it's obvious. Is it, you know, you talk about you'd never done it before and you're piecing those things together, but it's really a variation from finishing needlework, isn't it? I mean, that's such a precise thing. I mean,
yeah. And, you know, but
it can't be that big of a leap.
I'm all self-taught. I never knew how to sew anything. I didn't even know how to thread a machine. I'm not kidding you. And I just knew that, you know, with little kids, and I didn't know they had anything like finishers out there. I mean, that's how dumb I was about everything. I just always did everything myself, and I always did hard finishes. And then I thought one day, I think this was like in 2007 or 8. And I thought, oh, I can like make pillows and stuff. I can do that. And so I taught myself everything I know. So seriously, how I've taught myself is by reading sewing blogs and, of course, YouTube. YouTube has been a huge part of my formation, my sewing formation. So that's how come I feel so strongly about doing tutorials myself, because I have learned from others' generosity. So that's why I try to give back on posting finishing videos, because that's how I taught myself. And if I can do it, anybody can do it, because I knew nothing. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That when I got my sewing machine, which, yeah, the extent of my sewing has been making a cover for my magnifier from your pattern and, and then putting edging around linen. So there you go. That's pretty impressive. But, but you talk about YouTube, the night I spent 3 hours and could not get the bobbin to work. Oh man, I was just at the edge of throwing that machine across the, I couldn't get it to work. And so somebody surely is going to show me the trick on YouTube. So then I found one, and the first thing was make sure your thread's going in the direction of the arrow.
That's right. Yeah.
And guess what? For two hours,
that works, doesn't it?
For 2 hours, I had not having my thread go the direction of the arrow. And so then you just sit there with a red face. There's nobody around, of course, and you just red face because it's just embarrassing. But
yeah.
Then it worked, you know, surprise of surprises, it worked. And
I mean, yeah, the bobbin, that whole bobbin thing, I mean, that can really screw
up the
work.
That's the devil's, that's the evil. Those
yes, it is.
Yes.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
They're evil. And somebody ought to figure out how to do them better. That's just.
Well, you know, and that's the bobbin that I'm on my new machine, because my Janome's are just drop and load. And this new machine, I have to do it like the old, you know, it's an industrial machine is what this new machine is. And so you have to like thread the bobbin case and then load the bobbin case and all that stuff. And I have problems with it still. Every time I thread it or load it or anything, I have to pull out the instruction book because I'm like, how do I do this? So, I mean, no, that whole bobbin deal, that can like make or break a sewing adventure for certain. I mean, it really can. So I feel you on that.
Well, that one night, it just about did. I'll tell you. It's like, come on, this can't be this tough. And it wasn't if I just followed the directions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm impressive. Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, now I'm doing hit and miss, but I'm doing a Mary Corbett embroidery alphabet. It's just simple alphabets that she has an ebook, simple alphabets, and it's embroidery. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, lazy daisy and stem stitch, you know, there's nothing complicated about it. So I'm doing those, but my end game is to make some flat finishes like you do. I want to be like Donna, you know? But you know, I want to make a stand up, and so then I had a couple questions, and I've watched the videos. I've watched the videos, but it's when you wrap the cloth around the board,
mm-hmm.
and getting it square, it seems like there's a trick there.
Well, did you watch my latest flat fold one?
That one I've not gotten to that one, no.
Okay, so the simple flat fold, I tell you, and I think that people don't realize this, but I'm always learning. I mean, we all are always learning, and I'm still learning on how to finish things and what is the best approach. So on my newest simple flat fold video, I lace it. And I have found that lacing is very much more forgiving. Now, it's more time consuming. There's a lot more time involved, but it's very forgiving. And I feel it's probably a little bit, I guess that it's probably more archival. I mean, even though they say Aline's tacky glue is acid free, whatever. I don't know. But I will say that lacing, I lace everything now. And I started doing it kind of sporadically about a year and a half ago. And then over the last 6 months, I just lace everything. So anything flat, I lace it. I don't glue it anymore. And you can get those much more. It's much more forgiving, and you can correct mistakes easier by lacing. So give a look at that video. And how I do it to get straight is, when you're cutting your boards for whatever size you want it. So the first thing I do is I iron it and I lay it down and I figure what my margin, how much of that from the edge of your stitching to the edge of the board, how much of that margin, how much of your linen or your ground fabric do you want showing? In my opinion, the closer, the tighter you are to that stitching, the more focus is on that stitching, the tighter you are to it. You don't want a lot of margin because that draws your eyes away, like thinking, why'd they leave all that margin around? Or at least that's how I think about it.
You're dead right, because that's photography 101. Fill the frame with your subject. For that very reason. Leave a bunch of stuff on the outside and your subject just recedes away. And that's basic photography right there. No, you're dead
right.
Well,
okay. I didn't even know. I'm glad. I like tight margins. And so I do like a fourth to a half an inch around on all four sides is what I typically leave. And it depends if there's a square border, that's hard. If you have just a single stitch or a double stitch border, that framing the stitching, that's hard to get that straight because it'll be, it'll be wavy. And then that, and with me being as anal as I am, that drives me nuts if I find that to be wavy or off a little bit, and I'll work and work and work. And if you glue that, you can still pull it up and work it. But lacing it, it's just easier. And you can put a couple extra laces in if one place is wonky. You know what I'm saying? So I have been lacing everything, like I said, everything flat for the last, I would say, a good six months at least, probably longer than that. And so I decided to go ahead and update because I'd never done a simple flat fold. I did the mounted flat fold as a video, and I decided to go ahead and do a simple flat fold as a video and show how I updated my thought process on that. And I laced it, and it really does make a, I've done a couple different things on that video. I also add two pieces of mat board to the front. So actually when I make a flat fold, I used to just cut four pieces, and now I cut five pieces, and I glue the top piece I'm going to mount the needlework on. I glue two pieces together before I mount it. And that just makes that, in my mind, which can kind of be convoluted sometimes, but in my mind, that makes that piece stand out just a little bit more. Uh-huh. And just focuses it right in on, you know, whatever edging you have is just secondary to the actual stitching. It's not, it enhances it as an afterthought. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing that. I started doing that like maybe at the end of last year. I just kind of tried it on a couple of my own flat folds because I like flat folds. That's one of my favorite finishes for my personal stitching is a flat fold. And so I started doing that on my own. I thought, man, this is really looking good. And so I just did a couple more techniques on that newest video that I feel brings all elements, just makes it superior as a, as I think that's one of my best tutorials that I've ever done is that simple flat fold.
Well, I'll definitely watch that. Cause one of the things that I have as a goal is to teach myself how to lace because for nothing more than I got to believe that will save me considerably on custom framing because of the labor involved.
Yeah. I also have at Christmas time, I posted how I frame, because I frame all my stuff myself, or predominantly all my stuff myself. And I lace all my things, and then I'll pin it on along the edge, also into the foam core after I've laced it. And you're right. If you get lacing down, you can lace your own frame things, and it'll just be a piece of cake. And I use my quilting rulers, you know, my see-through big rulers. I'm always measuring my margins to make sure that I hit whatever my margin is on all four sides. And that's how I do it. I know some people will pull a thread, you know, like to be, that's their line. So they'll measure their margins and then they'll pull a thread. But to me, that's just like, I don't know. That would scare me to do that. What if you didn't pull the right thread?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd be hesitant too. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't do that. Now I will pull a thread if I'm going to cut, if I want to make sure that I'm going to cut it right. Sometimes I'll pull a thread if that's going to be where I cut it, you know, and then sew it. But I won't pull a thread. I'm hesitant about pulling a thread and then framing or finishing or whatever. I just am hesitant about that. But I know people that say to do that, but I wouldn't do that personally.
I can see where that would work because it would almost give like a groove for the on the edge of the foam core for the cloth to lay in.
Right.
If that makes
sense. And then
sense.
It won't be right, and it won't be seen because it's up in the, you know, the whatever that's called, the lip of the frame, you won't see that the linen is pulled. But to me, I just think, oh, yikes, you start pulling threads and that just scares me personally.
Yeah.
Now, I'm certain people will say, that's crazy. That's the way you do it. But that's not what I would do. I just measure. You know, I just measure my stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I can see that makes you nervous or would make you nervous. I mean, if you're doing hardanger, and you're pulling threads, but you've got something to hold the surrounding area intact. You know, that's
right
before you pull them. But this would not have that. Yeah. You
know. No. So and plus, what if you want to do something else with that someday, and then you got pulled threads? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So because I just got done with an order where it was from a needlework shop, and they were all models that she had finished, and she wanted me to redo them. Like refresh them.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I took them all apart from the models that she had and redid them into something totally different. And if she would have pulled threads or anything like that, I couldn't have, you know, redone them.
Right.
So it was, you know, that, I mean, there you go. That just goes to show you too, you know, but.
Now that's interesting. And by the way, your hair is rubbing your mic again.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry.
I'll pull it up. Okay. I hear.
Here
can
I
you
am.
Hear me?
I'm back.
Okay.
Now.
Okay.
It's a new mic, and the old mic I used to just be able to brush the mute button, and this one you physically have to click it, and I'm not quite getting it right.
Okay,
back to the deal here. Mm-hmm. That's interesting about having a finished piece refreshed.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I was thinking the other day, I mean, I see the stuff you do and I see it all over Facebook, the different, I mean, it's just a lot of innovation going on in the way pieces are finished. And it made me think about that very thing, taking something that, and something old that was framed and say, you know, that's nice in the frame, but if that was a stand up, it would really be neat. And so then, you know, take it apart and do it as a stand-up. Because, I mean, there's just a lot of innovation and creativity anymore. And I think that gets back to all the sharing that goes on the internet and on Facebook. People are just seeing and getting more inspiration to do these things rather than just hang it on a wall.
Right. And, well, you can, and it's so finishing. Is just, and I've refreshed things myself, too. Like if I have an ornament that I feel looks nasty, I'll redo it.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, finishing can just, and I, you know, I've been doing ornaments since I was 15 years old. So think about that. And some of, you know, I've grown even in just in the last 5 years, I've grown in my finishing abilities. And, so you can just redo stuff and make it look better. And that's exactly what I did. Is I mean, I thought that the models that came here, I'll be honest with you, I'm like, you know how designers say, I don't want to see any other designer's work because I don't want my mind contaminated with anybody, any other designer's work. Well, here they came as models that were already finished, and my mind was contaminated because I couldn't see that thing different from the way it was already finished. So I took it apart, and I really struggled with this because I was like, I wanted to do a good job. And so I took them apart, but I kept on seeing as what it came as. So I took it all apart and I ironed them and I just laid them out and I put them back in. I have a system where I have boxes and stuff, and I put them back in their box, and I did somebody else's models, or I did somebody else's finishing. And then a couple of days later, I got it back out and I looked at them again. And so I could still see them as what they were when they came to me, but it wasn't as bad. And then I started finishing. And then once I got into the finishing, then it kind of flowed much easier. And I really think I had a good set of finishes. So, you know, that's kind of hard, but you're right. There is a lot of creativity. A lot of people are coming up with wonderful ways of displaying their needlework and their passion in creative ways besides framing. And I think that's important because there's only so much space on a wall and we all can't frame everything. And I reserve only my most special things for framing, and everything else I finish and, you know, something for my home. So I think it's important. I think finishing is a very important, you know, tool to have in your toolbox.
Well, that, you know, that's just it. Your flat folds and your pillow ornaments, you know, not necessarily to hang on a tree, but you see a collection of those in a basket, and the flat folds can sit anywhere. And as you've described many times, to store them is nothing. And so you can have seasonal changes or just, you know, rotate them or whatever. And it really gives a lot of versatility, not something you would have with things hung on a wall where you've got a nail and it fits there with a grouping. And if you change it doesn't necessarily fit. So,
And that's why I like it. And you can do even, people always, this is the number one question I get. Well, I have this piece and it's like 11 by 12. And can you do one that big? Can you do a flat fold that big? Yeah, you can do a flat fold that big. And they turn out beautiful. They really do. And you can set them on a hearth or whatever. So
yeah, no, there's so many ways you can use them. And to me, it's it's so many ways you can use them, but so many ways you can switch them out and keep your look in your house fresh.
Yes.
And, yeah. Different things, different times of year, different seasons, holidays, so on and so forth. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. No, that's why it's kind of my goal. I want to be able to do those. I got a feeling I'll just send them to you, but here, Bonna, do these.
And, you know, my husband always says, why do you post those tutorials? Because all you're doing is selling your, you know, like giving away your secrets. You're going to run yourself out of business. I'm telling you, Gary, I am not running myself out of business. And you know, for every person that you have to have a lot of, you know, stuff to finish. I mean, I know that people do things on a, you know, don't do things on a grand scale as I do, and it looks great, you know, and it's fabulous, and they don't have like every little bitty techie thing that I have, but it does take a lot of stuff and a lot of dedicated time. I mean, that's all that finishing is about. People always ask me, you know, I can't finish. Yes, you can finish. The biggest, largest component to finishing is time. And it has to be time that's dedicated to finishing. You can't be like cooking supper and finishing at the same time. Right. You have to just finish and think about what you're doing. And anybody can finish. There's no magic bullet to it. Anybody can do it. And, but I some of my most loved pieces are pieces that I finished myself. And it's like what you say, you change them out seasonally. And I get excited, you know, like we're getting ready to, you know, I always change out from my spring Easter-y welcome stuff, you know, Easter stuff to, like my patriotic, because my whole house is patriotic in the summertime. And I have pieces that I only bring out at, you know, right before Memorial Day. And we're getting ready for the big change here soon, where I'll decorate my whole house with that stuff that I haven't seen it since last year. And I get excited about it, you know, because it's like, oh, I haven't seen this. And every time I open up my box, it's like going up, you know, opening up a box of memories. And that's how I think about it. So, you want to give honor to whatever you stitch. And I think, you know, spectacular, you know, finishing gives honor to the time that you spent stitching it. So that's how I think about it.
Well, and, you know, and to that whole thing of doing the videos and giving away your techniques, yeah, you can make that argument, but there's a whole universe of people out there who are begging for 2 hours of uninterrupted time just to stitch.
Right.
And the thought of taking that time to finish something, you know, it's like, forget it, you know, send it to Vanna send it to Vanna, she'll do it. And I can have those 2 hours to stitch, or 4 hours, or whatever it is. I mean, there's for a lot of people, it's, you know, just, and I'm one of them, quite frankly. You know, just give me a couple of hours of uninterrupted time where I'm awake. You know, 10 o'clock at night after a long day is not a good time. And and quite frankly, I'd rather stitch than finish. So
that's a lot of people think that way. A lot of people are like, I don't want to do it. You know, I just want somebody to do it. And it's not like, I think people think, oh, it's going to be really expensive. I don't feel like I charge that much, honestly. I'm not getting rich, Gary, finishing. So I just, you know, it's just, I enjoy it. I feel like I'm marginally good at it. And, you know, it keeps me engaged in life and my creative juices flowing. And I really do like, I can't see myself doing really anything else. And I wouldn't have said that 3 years ago, but
yeah.
I do believe that.
You know, and look what it's allowed you to do. It's allowed you to leave that job you had and be at home and be at home where your kids are at when they come home and work your own hours, though I'm sure they're quite long. You know, and because, you know, that's the old thing that people don't understand. Yeah, I get to have my own business and, Yeah. Put in the hours. Yeah.
It's and you're never away from it.
Right.
You know, I'm always at work. You know what I mean? Because it's just down in my basement. And it's hard for me to, you know, I get up and I treat it like I'm going to work. I mean, that's what I'll say. I'll get up, you know, I get up at 4:30. I get my husband off to work. Now that the sun's coming up earlier, on the time, I make sure that I go outside and I do my walk or my bike ride or whatever. And then I come back, I get my kids off to school, and then it's, well, what are you doing? Well, I'm going to work. You know, that's I go down and I go to work, and I have a set lunch time where I spend, you know, at least 20 minutes doing something, not finishing. And then I go back and I work until 4 o'clock. And then I try to stop. I do stop and go up and make supper, and then I try not to come back down after supper. And that's hard. If you're like, and you think, oh, well, I just have to put the cording on this, or I just have to do this, or I just wanted to cut this out. And a lot of times I'll come back and come back down, and you know, before I know it, an hour and a half, 2 hours is gone. And my husband will go, you need to stop. Yep. There is tomorrow, you know? So that's what's hard for me, is just to think, you know, no, I would not be working. If I was in an office somewhere, I would not eat supper and then go back to work.
Right.
And I've got to remind myself, and that's hard. But yeah, I'm working full time hours, and I haven't worked full time hours in 20 years. Yeah. And, that's sometimes a little, and I'm not making the salary I would make if I was making working full time in a laboratory, but that's okay. Like you said, it's a give and take type thing. And, I'm enjoying myself.
I have a sense you sleep better at night. So,
oh yes, I do. I don't have panic attacks. I mean, and I'm just here with my cats, and they love me no matter what. And I'm very much more happy. I'm much more settled in life than what I was 2 years ago, and I'm thankful for that. Yeah. So, and I'm blessed that so many people want me to finish their things. More, even more. My husband says, "You are a victim of your own success," and that makes me happy that I'm able to do that. Sure. So,
well, and that's the hardest thing, because Margaret and I work at home too, and and we work 2 desks in what used to be our son's bedroom. And when we first started, that was the hardest thing. We had to consciously tell ourselves, stop. And especially on weekends, we would get talking about work, and it's like, what are we doing? Stop this. And it really is a discipline it's so easy. And Margaret does it more than I do. I've caught her more than once. When I'm downstairs watching TV, and she'll disappear, and then where'd she go? What's she doing? And she's up there at her machine. Well, I just wanted to edit this last article and get it done. And it's like, no, do that tomorrow. It's because you burn yourself out if you're not careful.
And, right.
Yeah, you really do.
And I do. I'll be honest with you. Last December, I was really.
I could tell by your comments you'd had enough. Yeah.
Yeah, I was done. And I never really, I always want to try to, my goal is to be done with all my Christmas finishing by the week of Thanksgiving. That way I can enjoy my 24 days of Christmas on my blog and enjoy Christmas without guilty feelings. And I got done for the most part with all my deadline stitching, but then I had people, please, and I've been such a good client. Well, I can't tell anybody no. You know what I mean? That is just like a personal flaw of mine. So I was working right up until Christmas, and then I thought, okay, now I'm done. I'm not working again until the end of January. I had so many people send me their things, you know, just put me in line. You don't have to do it. But it's here, and it kept on piling up and
guilty,
piling up. So I
guilt.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. And it piled up, and I started working like, you know, the second week in January, and I've been working. I finished 9 ornaments today, and with those ornaments, I'm up to 196 finishes since like the second week of January.
Holy smokes!
So
wow.
Yeah.
Oh, we should mention, what is your deadline for Christmas now? We should get that out there.
September 1st. I'm not accepting anything after September 1st. And I might have to move that up, Gary, depending on. I've got about approximately 36 people in line right now. And I'm working about, you know, they always ask me, what's your turnaround time? Because everybody wants, we're all guilty of this. Even myself is guilty of this. I want everything yesterday. And that's the same way it is with finishing. I'm running right now about a 7-week turnaround. And I've what I'm finishing right now was in, came here in the middle to late March. So I'm running about, you know, 6, 7, 8 weeks turnaround. And so I'm thinking September 1st. That's what it typically has been, historically have been. But if I don't want to put myself in the same situation I was last Christmas. So if I see by the end of July that I've got a lot of stuff here, I might have to move it up a couple weeks and just say, you know, because I'm one person. And like I say in my business plan, when people ask me for their, you know, can I see what your pricing is and all that stuff. In my business plan, I say, you know, I'm one person and I don't have elves that come out and help me at night. So, you know, I have that's the way I look at it. I don't have elves that come out and help me at night. And I'm one person and it's a handmade product and it takes time. On a good day, today was a phenomenal day, but this was something that I was familiar with and I had finished many of them before and they were just flat ornaments. You know, I hand sew all of my ornaments together, even the flat ones. I don't use glue. And so to finish 9 ornaments in 7 hours, wow, that's phenomenal.
That's moving. That's moving.
Yeah, I was, I did not get up to go to the bathroom. I was just sitting and working. But, you know, I told my husband, if I could catheterize myself, probably would.
No, that's not a mental image I want, Vonna. Stop it right there.
But anyways, on a good day, I can get like 4 or 5 finishes done in a good day. And there's many packages that are more than, you know, like 12. There's like today was 9. I have people with 12 pieces. I draw the line. I don't want any more than 12 at one in one package because that's typically like almost a full week of work.
Yeah.
12 things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's, you know, I say I have like 36 people waiting and that's probably over 200, well, not 200, probably at least 125, 150 finishes. Mm. Oh gosh. Yeah. So well, anyway. Hey.
Yeah. It's, the alternative is no good. So
you just, that's right.
Yeah.
So I just keep on plugging.
That's
keep
right.
on chugging.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. You could go back to the corporate world and work. You know?
Yeah, that's right. I don't think so. I'll just keep on finishing. Honestly, I really do look forward to I coming down here every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Go back to the corporate world. Nah, that's all right. I'll be in my basement. No. Thanks.
Yeah.
I'll
just be down here with my cat.
Yeah. I was wondering, there's been quite a few things posted lately about starting and ending threads. And it's something I obsess over. I mean, absolutely obsess over, probably ridiculously so. But I just have this... this fear that somewhere along the line, a stitch is going to come undone. And,
right.
You know, I just have that fear. And so that I wanted to ask you, does that happen when you're working on pieces? Do you have stitches come undone where they were not secured properly? Does that happen a lot
it doesn't
or some
happen.
Or?
No, it doesn't happen at all, typically on, well, I can't say at all. It has happened before, and I'll just restitch it. You know what I mean? I'll, like, if I can, I'll try to use the same thread that came unpopped, that popped, or if it's too, typically what it is it's just that they went under one leg of the X and cut it really close. Well, there's not much to work with. So right. I'll either... if I have that pattern, I'll see what the color was and then restitch that 1X myself, or I'll call them and tell them, hey, you had this, what is that? And they'll tell me what I'll try to match it. If it's just one stitch, it's not a big thing. I have had that happen before, but that was totally an error on their part by not anchoring it better. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But where it frequently happens, and this is had happened, oh, I would say out of 10 pieces that have these things on it, it would happen 7 times. I'm not kidding. So that's a very high percentage.
Yeah.
Is when they have like beads or Jabco buttons.
Oh.
Jabco buttons particularly. They just like, you need to tie those things on. And I think I told you that on your stockings, didn't I say tie it on?
Oh no, that was one instruction you gave me, and I knotted those suckers down. Yeah.
Yeah. And those, yours was one of the best ones I'd ever finished. But that, and I know that it was because I told you to do that. But like, you know, like tie those things, tie your Dabco buttons on, go through it. You know, like some people will just go through it once and that's it. And then like, you know, run their ending thread just through a row of stitches. Well, that's not enough to hold those on. No. And I mean, especially if you're making a pillow where you have to turn it out or something like that, and you're put, you know, you're pushing the whole thing through a little bitty, you know, hole, that it just pulls them off. And there's been times where I've lost, like I've been finishing something or not even finishing it yet, just, you know, laying it out to like measure it, and a button will pop off. And I'll have to, and I've lost one before and I've had to go buy.
Oh, geez.
You know what I mean? Just stuff like that. So I, that has made me, I was always kind of anal about that anyway, but it has definitely made me more anal about it since I've been finishing, that you tie those things on and nobody's going to see that because it's right. It's going to be hidden by the button. Nobody's going to see a bump or a lump or anything like that. And you tie it on and you knot it on to keep it on there.
Yeah.
So that's the number one thing that I can say. I have not seen pop stitches like, you know, like what you're talking about in not ending properly. That's not very common, but on buttons, that is very common. And charms, that's very common.
Yeah. Oh no, all those are knotted down. I guarantee you they ain't going anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what you want, because that, I mean, think about it, through, especially like on your shepherd's bush stocking, those are going to be used and handled,
yeah,
and, you know, things like that. And you don't want those flying off and losing them. You know, you want that to be nice, you know, their lifetime.
Right.
So, you know, knotted on there, anything that's going to be handled a lot, you want it knotted on there. And I think that people, you know, what's the number one rule, if we're going to follow rules of stitching, well, don't do no knots right, on cross stitching. Well, I'm sorry, you're gonna have to forget that when it comes to charms and buttons. You need a knot, you need to tie it on there. So
yeah. Oh yeah,
that's the one thing.
The thought of knotting actual stitching just scares me to death, but mm-hmm. Yeah, those extra things, especially ones that can snag on things,
yeah,
you know, nail them down so they aren't going anywhere. Yeah,
right. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's even been times where if I think that they're kind, you know, let's say I finished something and I think that button's not going to stay on there, I've even like placed just a little bit of glue right behind the shank, you know, like where the two holes are on the back side,
yep,
just to like hold it a little bit, because I know that it'll fall off eventually if I don't do something.
Right.
You know, to anchor it on there. So I've even done that. And so, yeah, you want to just make sure that's the number. That's a number one good tip for anybody finishing anything of their own products. Make sure that those buttons are tied and knotted on there.
Yeah, see, these things fascinate me, because to me, it's a way to learn. Because when you get them, by the time you finish it, You probably have handled it more, even as gentle as you can be, handled it more roughly and more in more ways than any stitcher handled it all the way through. And so it really puts a test on how well those threads are put into the cloth and anchored, and mm-hmm. And especially any ornamentation. And
right.
So to hear that you're not seeing stitches pop out, and that the place people really need to focus is the ornamentation. That really speaks well of all the people who are sending you the projects.
Right. And I really honestly, you know, people, another thing that I always hear is don't look at my backs. You know, like my backs are perfect. They're not perfect. And, you know, don't look at my backs. Oh, I'm not a very good stitcher. Don't, you know, I hear that all the time. And I don't like necessarily look at, I really don't even, I guess I do look at them. I don't judge them though. I think people think in my mind, I'm going, boy, this person,
why
in the world is she even stitching? I don't even think like that. And, but I do everything I can in my finishing, and I think about it hard. I mean, I do put a lot of time thinking about stuff like this, and I've evolved and I've learned as I've finished, but I do everything I can when I finish something for someone to make it so that that stitching will never, you know, that stitching is protected on the backside. That's why I use interfacing. That's why I line it, you know, all of those things so that those stitches won't be popped or torn out or, you know, snagged or whatever.
Right.
And I think that that's in, you know, that's important to a final product, you know, as a, you know, I guess I'm a, considered a professional, you know, I'm saying that I'm a professional. I'm trying to give you a product that I finished professionally and I want it to stand up to the testament of time and to be beautiful forever, you know, as, you know, as long as your lifetime or what you have it or whatever. So, but yeah, no, I don't see very many pop stitches. I really don't. Like I said, occasionally you'll see one and it was just like they cut it too close or only put it underneath one leg of the X, but I don't see it that often. I really don't. And not That's at great. All.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to keep obsessing over it. So
that's okay.
Yeah. All right, Vonna, we're going to end it here because if I start the next one, it'll be another half hour. So we're going to end it
okay.
here.
Okay. All righty.
All right. No thanks problem. A lot. Really appreciate the time and always, always fun to talk with you.
Well, thank you, Gary, for having me. I've truly enjoyed talking to you and coming and being here for your audience on Fiber Talk. And you do a great service to the industry. You honestly do. And for all the stitchers out there that listen to you, this is a wonderful venue for learning and meeting new people. So thank you, Gary. And thank you, Christine, if you're listening, for all that you do for us.
Well, thanks. Glad to do it. And thanks to everybody for listening. And we will be back. Christine and I will be back on Wednesday.